Coming up in this episode.
For example, there are roughly 600,000 HGV licences in this country. At any one time, 250,000 are lying dormant because people decided to step away from the industry for whatever reason that may be.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining, and would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hello and welcome to Richard Smith, who's Managing Director of the RHA. For those that don't know, it's the Road Haulage Association. So hello and welcome, Richard. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Malcolm, and good afternoon to you.
And where does today find you?
Finds me in the RHA head office, which is based in Peterborough.
Okay.
And it's funny, I was debating with a colleague today why the RHA's head office is based in Peterborough.
Did you come to a conclusion?
We came to a conclusion that initially it was by chance,
yep.
But over the last 10 years, Peter has actually developed into a well-connected logistics hub for the east side of England and indeed the ports. So it's by chance, but a very ideal location for the industry that we represent.
And it's a lovely part of the world too.
And a lovely part of the world too.
So, Richard, could you tell us a little bit more about what you do? What does it mean to be Managing Director of the RHA? What's it about?
It's a very good question, actually, Malcolm, and it's one that I've been in the association for 5 years, and I initially joined for a very different reason for the role that I'm occupying today. So I initially joined to coordinate a legal action that the RHA is bringing on behalf of the industry against the truck manufacturers, which might sound a little bit counterintuitive for a trade association to do in this industry, but it's based on the cartel activity that the manufacturers operated in the early 2000 up to 2011. So that's the reason why I joined. And that was really around about coordinating litigation funding and the legal teams to actually bring that case to fruition, which we're currently in the process of doing, and probably about halfway through that process. Then after about 12 months, the CEO of the time, a gentleman called Richard Burnett, asked if I would start to get involved in the commercial side of the trade association.
Sure.
So rather unusual for a trade association, we are also a £13 million business.
Okay.
33% of our revenue comes from membership and the rest comes from commercial activity, which makes us slightly unusual. It's from a funding perspective because the majority of trade associations will be fully funded by either their membership or by support from certain bodies within the industry. And unusually, or very interestingly, the commercial activity we're involved in is a training school, which is around life acquisition and it's around professional qualifications. We have an online shop, which generates £2 million a year and is fully operated by ourselves. It's only a small operation, but it's still there. And we have all the technical support and audit services you would expect a trade association to have within this industry to bring accreditation and standards to the operators that sit within our small sector of this large logistics industry.
Okay, interesting. I mean, I guess you're also campaigning, aren't you? So there are three areas that you sort of have within your website, which two I absolutely understood and one surprised me. And I thought, and it was a pleasant surprise. It's not a bad surprise. So telling about promoting skills and attracting more people to work into the industry, which is part of the reason we're talking today, but then very much looking at facilities and what are the facilities like for drivers. And I guess the summary is not good enough.
Yeah.
But then the interesting one was for the environment and you're looking at net zero as well. I thought that was the element that probably surprised me in a very positive way in terms of what you're up to.
I think it's quite interesting, Malcolm, because that's a comment we've had from a number of people over the last 6 to 8 months. And just to bring the story from myself right up to date, about a year ago, when the CEO decided to leave the trade association, the board of directors and the exec team took a conscious decision to replace a CEO role, which would be viewed as being visionary, a managing director's role, which is more about managing the here and now against a clearly defined plan.
Yeah.
So last year, for the first time in the history of the RHA, the board and the executive agreed a 5-year plan, which is reviewed on an annual rolling basis. And the targets around that are obviously commercial, to generate the revenue to invest in the organisation to keep driving forward, but also from a policy and lobbying perspective to agree very clearly You know, when you see the three little letters RHA, what do they stand for in this industry? So if you're a member of the association, if you work in this space, if you're just flicking through the website and you land upon it, what are we doing from a campaign and lobbying perspective? And as you quite rightly say, it's about facilities, skills and the environment. And the environmental one is more and more, although there's probably the longest duration from an actual impact upon the core of our membership, which is around diesel trucks and diesel coach operators. It's the one that's probably the most pressing in terms of clear definition about what will the alternative fuel be for our members. What is the, what does that mean from an infrastructure perspective? What does that mean from a facilities perspective? What does that mean from a technical perspective in terms of support for the industry? For example, where does the our larger members, such as Kalina, you know, or Stobart, right the way down to our smaller members, where are they going to get the fuel from?
Yeah.
What is that fuel? What's that investment thought process that we need to start now? So in 5, 10, 15 years' time, when they start to replace their fleet, they're not left with either a stranded asset in the terms of they've got nothing of any value, or they've actually not left with an asset that they cannot use in the new way of operating.
Sure. And Is there any focus on how, let's say, management systems will need to change in this new net zero environment?
Yeah, and it's something that we're becoming involved with. And again, one of the long debates we had last year and continue to have is, as a trade body representing what we describe as a small majority. So our average member, we've got 8,500 members, and average fleet size is less than 15 trucks.
Okay.
So the small majority. The majority of this industry, as you know, Malcolm, is made up of small operators that form part of networks of larger operators. So the reliance and the interlink between the two, as the word chain suggests, is very strong and very evident. And whilst the larger operators in this space will be have the money to invest and develop their own plans around, you know, is it hydrogen, is it X, Y, and Z, the smaller operators are ill-informed of what that change means to them. And probably how they run their businesses is less sophisticated and less forward-looking. It's very much the here and now, the short and the medium term. You know, and having spoken to a number of our members, comments such as, well, it's 2040. We can still buy diesel trucks to 2040. So it will probably be my son's concern or daughter's concern, or we may have sold the business by then. So it's really one of our key focuses is to get interest, you know, from the members. Realize this is a here and now issue, which is why it's a prominent campaign. And also to start to get them to think about not just buying the truck, but how that sits within a system and a process.
Yep.
You know, and one of the more recent things that we spoke to some of our members around was actually building management systems, you know, and the actual managing the energy and the output and the environmental impact of their warehouses and their office blocks, for example. Because, you know, that vision that a typical operator from a road haulage perspective will have is just around the truck. They don't consider the lateral elements, you know, electric cars for the members, et cetera, et cetera. So when we talk about environment, we're principally talking initially, our big ask of government this year, and the area that we're campaigning on is to define for the industry what the alternative fuel is going to be for the HGBs. You know, so the 44 tonners, the 18 tonners and above, what is the alternative fuel? Mm-hmm. You know, we feel as a trade body, the bands are pretty much defined. It's electricity. You know, coaches will be pretty much defined where it'll be a hybrid, we feel, between electricity and or hydrogen and gas. So when it's still electricity, when it's longer distance, it'll be one of the two. But the HGV market, there is yet to be, from our perspective, clear clarity around what the alternative fuel is going to be. And certainly with recent events in Europe in the last 6 months and, you know, the great tragedy in the Ukraine, and people now starting to look more at fossil-based fuels, you know, will there actually be a delay around diesel? You know, is it going to accelerate it? So I think there's a lot of variables around that very question. And that's what we're trying to find clarity on.
Okay, and clearly there's a need for investment, and that is always a challenge in terms of a low margin industry, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's last year we introduced a coach membership, which was the first time in our 78 year history that we'd deviated away from the traditional haulier. And the reason we introduced that is that 80% of the challenges faced by the coach sector are exactly the same as those faced by the haulier sector. You know, it's around facilities, it's around skills, it's around campaigns. And in terms of the investment levels required, you know, it's about that awareness piece of, you know, where's that thought process going to start in terms of a new truck, let's say, and, you know, I think you can buy an electric truck now for £450,000, you know, from Volvo or from Scania or from one of the main manufacturers, you know, against a typical truck that's costing about £100,000 now. Yep. So there's a huge level where our operators in this industry need to start thinking about where that investment comes from. And as you quite rightly say, you know, it's a typically less than 5% margin industry for the majority of our members operating. And ultimately, it's an essential service. And there's only one way, as we're seeing now, with recent challenges around drivers' rates and fuel rates, where that cost will end up sitting and it'll get moved to you and I as a consumer.
Yep.
On the price in the beans or a loaf of bread or, you know, a bottle of wine. You know, so it's our thinking is very much about engaging across the key stakeholders. We're not just talking to DfT and the Secretary of State for Transport. We're very much talking across the Treasury departments. We're talking across, you know, BEIS. We're talking across local as well as national governments to get their thought process, particularly with the changing structure of the UK governments, where there's more devolved powers. You know, because it's, you know, the Metro Mayors, for example, will become more and more prominent over the next 4 or 5 years. And the recent report that Michael Gove produced around levelling up just confirms that. So it's really, it's not just what we're engaging about, it's the who.
Okay.
You know, how. So it's really a very fluid process at this moment in time.
Okay, thank you. What's the biggest problem that you and your team have had to solve this year, in the past year?
Biggest problem in industry or the biggest problem as a trade association? Because the two are slightly different.
Well, let's start in the industry in terms of anything you might be working within that, and then maybe focus on trade association.
I mean, there's two or three, but the one that I'll pick is the driver shortage.
Yeah.
You know, so around August last year, it was very clear, and we were certainly very vocal and brought it to the forefront of the industry's attention. We believe that, you know, that there was a significant lack of drivers, and that started to manifest itself on the back of COVID and also with the exit from Brexit and IR35. There was three events that provided the perfect storm. And, you know, along with Logistics UK and the other trade bodies, we lobbied and petitioned very hard about, you know, intervention. We were very much looking for allowing overseas workers to come back on the critical occupation list for a longer period of time than the 3 months that we ended up with. But that resulted in the boot camps, you know, and, you know, the boot camps have undoubtedly had an impact. For example, in March this year, there was 11,300 tests compared to a typical month. This is HGV licenses, a typical month of 3,500 to 4,000 previously. Wow. And 6,500 new entrants came into the industry in that 1 month period compared to 2,000 to 3,000 previously. So it's that injection of focus and cash and resources clearly brought people into the industry. The big challenge around drivers going forward, just to give a little bit of a longer term view, is that there's as many people leaving the industry on a monthly basis as there are joining.
Yep.
So we're standing still, you know, and our concern, which is why we're continuing to keep at the forefront of our lobbying and campaigning, is that when the World Cup starts, for example, and we progress to the final and everybody's in the beer gardens and there's a demand on it will just again very, very obvious that we've not got enough drivers delivering beer to the beer gardens. You know, yep. So it's a process. But that was probably one of the biggest focuses of the trade association last year, and where we saw a real tangible benefit. Because one of the challenges as a trade body we face is, when do we actually get to the end position? And the one thing I've learned in this role over the last 5 years is that we never do.
Yep.
You know? And it's similar to business in the majority of ways, but it's that there's never a final position. You know, because it continually moves, and we have to be agile as a trade body, you know, to recognise that and understand from our membership exactly what's going on at the coalface, so we can articulate that to the relevant powers, whether it be national, whether it be a devolved power, or whether it be a key stakeholder, you know, so we can actually inform and be informed of how we can move that forward.
Thank you, Richard. I mean, in addition to, driver recruitment and general recruitment into the industry, which I think is going to be an ongoing theme for a number of years yet. Is there anything in the next 12 months that you're saying, well, okay, we're now going to be working on this area?
from a skills perspective, we are joining and collaborating across the trade bodies in the supply chain. you know, to and you're probably aware of this, Malcolm, to launch the Generation of Logistics, which is a government-backed program to increase the awareness, you know, about the professions, the opportunities that are open in this sector. Because one thing that we're very keen to do as a trade association is not just focus on drivers, but it's also the technicians, the service, you know, it's also the transport planners of tomorrow, it's also the warehouse managers. And that's where we overlink with Claire at UQA, and that's where we work with and support, because it's, you know, it's okay, large logistics providers doing a warehouse to wheels program, they bring more drivers in, but then Claire's members are faced with a shortage of FLT drivers because there's nobody to drive, the fact they can't balances to drive, you know, the that backfill. So one thing, to answer your question directly, I think we need to be very joined up as a sector and understand the impact when we start to promote, you know, this sector in terms of where we might create issues further down the supply chain or further up the supply chain, if you're looking at that. So it's really around skills and awareness and going around making sure that everybody's aware that this is a career. You know, you can have a marketing career in supply chain. You can have an accounts career in supply chain. You can have a very technical career in some of the bigger automated sheds. You can be an engineer, as we both know from our previous experiences, as well as you can drive a truck. And actually, the most important thing we're working on in that space is that actually driving a truck is a profession. It's a skill. It's an art. It's something that should be celebrated. It should be looked upon like an accountancy degree. You know, it's not just at the bottom of the pile. I think the industry has suffered from that. And, you know, I've spoke to a number of our members recently, and we've kind of self-inflicted that as well, you know, because the way that, you know, we've treated drivers as an industry in the last 20 years, if I'm brutally honest, and I can speak on behalf of operations I've been involved with. Sure. And I don't mean in an inhumane way. I'm talking about pay levels, levels of investment, and probably levels of recognition within businesses of how critical the driver is in the overall process of delivery.
Okay. I want to maybe focus on Richard now, and I want to put you into a time machine and take you back in time and maybe start with the question of what was your dream job as a child? What did you want to be?
It's an interesting one because I never really had a view of what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting with my career advisor, because in those days you used to have career advisors when you were 15 and you were going to do your O-levels, and what do you want to do, young man? I don't really know. And I sort of wandered into the sixth form and do some A-levels. And then I got really interested in economics, because I did economics as an A-level, and I started to think I want to do something business-orientated. And then I took 2 or 3 years out of the industry and did a number of things and travelled the world and did all this sort of good stuff whilst working, and came back at 21 and thought, I need to go and get a degree now. Because that's back in the day, you know, we're talking mid-80s, where you get a degree and then, you know, you can decide on your profession. So that's what I did. I went to Newcastle and got a degree in economics and geography. And then when I left university, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. Having done bars, being a chauffeur, doing a little bit of the curate with some rock bands and all this sort of great stuff and great learning. And I got a job working on a production line in a company in Brighouse, which is my hometown in West Yorkshire. And then one day, the warehouse manager came to me and said, one of the lads is phoned in sick. Can you just go and load that vehicle over there? And then 3 hours later, I'm still loading 26 pallets onto a truck because I was driving it like a cat. Yeah, you can imagine the scene, Malcolm. turning around and said to Colin, who was the warehouse manager at the time, I ain't never doing that again. Anyway, long story short, I started off working in the warehouse and I did that for 2 years. And I really, really enjoyed it. And then I got the opportunity to run the warehouse. And then I moved into the PLC environment, working for TDG initially, as it was then, and then just worked my way through. So I fell into the industry. And I was kind of a lost soul in that respect, looking for something that gave me a challenge. The one thing I knew I didn't want to be, because I tried it for 3 weeks, was to be an accountant. I'm very commercial in that respect. I just didn't want the structure and the rigors. But I wanted something that was challenging constantly, which is why I came into this industry, I think. And I've stayed in it for 30-odd years.
And for sure, the logistics industry is constantly challenging. That's what makes it utterly fascinating. And it's one area that, you know, I certainly agree. I didn't start as one in a career in logistics and supply chain. I started my life, my working life as a chemist. So, but then that was, frankly, it's like working like a short order cook in a fast food restaurant. That was more what that was like. So, but it did give me the technical ability and production knowledge to begin to stretch into there. Given the benefit of hindsight, what do you wish you would have known when you started your career?
I think there's three things, and I think this is what I've certainly learned through my career. I think the ability to listen, genuinely listen when people are talking in groups of people, you know, and not just think you listen, but listen and absorb and take on that other point of view, you know, whether it be running a team of guys in the warehouse, whether it be sat around the corporate table, you know, whether it be, you know, negotiating with government, you know, that undoubtedly, you know, the ability to listen, digest and reflect, you know, probably a key one. The other one is patience. You know, but I think that's something you have to work on. I don't think it's naturally. I think that, you know, learn to be. The logistics industry, typically the areas I've worked in, are very what I call immediate and real time. You know, it is about hearts and lungs. It's about making a decision that's going to impact something in 2 hours' time. And a really good example of that, to bring that to life, is one of my roles was running a chilled distribution network. And you literally, you know, had 240 loads going in 12 hours to all the big DCs in the country. And if the M5 shut on a Friday afternoon and the curtain dropped at 8 o'clock in one of the major distributors, you had 6 double decks, which would be 240 pallets of sandwiches at the time, coming back. You know, so it's really that, you know, it's that ability to be able to work in that environment, but at the same time be patient and considered, so you make the best decision and listen to the views that are going on around you. And then finally, the last one is to be empathetic and understanding. You know, I know that's a word that people use a lot these days, but I think in this industry, going back to the point I make about drivers, understand somebody else's perspective. True. Which is tied to listening patience. So when a driver gets out of a cab, and I've seen this so many times when I've been in the transport office, and it comes to the window, and the guys in the office have all been interacting with each other for 10 hours, and they've all been talking, or 8 hours, I think it is these days, and the driver's been working on his own, really, for the best part of 6 of them, and it takes you time to wake up to a conversation. So don't assume the person, because he's quiet at the window, is a little bit slower than you are, or he's not really engaging personally, he's just getting into that different environment that he's working, if that makes sense. But I think empathy is a great thing. And finally, is you should always, in my opinion, you know, thank you is a great word. Yep. You should always show appreciation. And likewise, when something goes wrong, you shouldn't be afraid to say this has not gone right. So if that answers the question, Malcolm, it's probably more than three there.
It's entered the question beautifully, and I agree with each and every one. My journey has been one of increasing patience as I've grown older, and that's probably the best learning that I've had. Who's inspired you most in your career, and why?
There's probably been a couple of people outside of work, and this is John Bon Jovi. You know, now I happen to like the music. I happen to have had an association with the band over the years, in especially later on when I was doing some security stuff for them. But I think to have a longevity of a career, you know, and to be a very good role model in that type of area, the rock and roll space, is something that you can admire. And that's a person that's determined, that's focused. And ultimately, you know, when it goes out every night in front of 40,000 people, he doesn't do it because he needs to do it for the money. He doesn't do it for the accolades. He does it because of the fans.
Yep.
So it's, you know, he leads, and you know that's his thing. So I find that quite inspiring. I think in a business context, people I've actually worked with, I spent a bit of time working with, and I'll name the guy, is Sean Fowler.
Yeah.
He's from Bidfest, and Sean. The thing I like about Sean, you know, was he was a very challenging person to work for, but he had a vision, and it was a clear vision, and he would let you. You know, he'd explain what the vision was, and he'd let you go and do that. You know, and he'd support you to do that. And if you weren't doing it very well, he'd tell you you weren't doing it very well. And if you were doing it very well, he'd tell you well. And he always used to say this to me. You might have to edit a bit of this, but I'll use the literal words. He said, Rich, he said, there's two things that I like about you. I said, what's that? He said, one is you always make me look good. And working for somebody, you should make your boss look good. You know, you should inform and, you know, make him look good in the sense that he's well informed, and where he can, he's making the best out of the situation. I said, what's the other one, Sean? He says, you always know when to go away. and leave the room. That was 2006.
You've cleaned that one up, haven't you?
I have indeed. And indeed, he gave me the poster, which on the podcast you can't see over my shoulder, which is Kipling, which is If. And he said, you know, if you read that poem, Rich, he said, wherever you are, whatever you're doing in business or in life, there'll always be two sentences that mean something and can help you. So he's quite a deep man, you know, underneath. He does said that. No, but Sean is, you know, he's a very thoughtful, considered person. And I just thought he was quite an inspirational person to work for.
Well, I guess, Richard, I mean, I'm surprised that you really do put the rock and roll into the RHA. That's been the discovery discovery that I've had as a result of that. In the last few minutes of the interview, I'd like to maybe focus on giving some advice to people considering a career in logistics. Do you think it's a good idea for people to consider the logistics and supply chain industry as a career in logistics? And what would be your advice to them?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I think this sector is is the best sector to work in. And that's why I've stayed in it for as long as I have. I think the thing about logistics is to understand what people mean when they use the word logistics.
Yeah.
You know, we are, you know, what I do as a trade association represent the 8,000 members. We are a very small part of that logistics chain. And I was talking to Richard Ballantyne this morning from the ports. You know, he's also another part of that logistics chain. And then we move across, you know, to the manufacturer. So it's to really understand what we mean by logistics. And to really, if they understand it, they'll recognise where there will be roles that they will enjoy. You know, so if you like a role that's, you know, that you're not particularly into the academic world, or you don't like analysis, or you don't like, you know, and you want something that's quite hands-on, but you can still be in charge of your own destiny and you've still got a, you know, a responsible job in that sense, you know, driving, leading a team in a warehouse, making those immediate decisions, that's an ideal role where you can give that autonomy. If you want a job that you can leave behind on a night, you know, and or at the end of the week and go on without any worries, again, those roles are that, you know, very intense. If you want a career where you've got a very step procession, if it's in a legal profession or if it's in a marketing profession or an accounts profession, you can have that in logistics as well. I mean, the advice I would give to people is just sit in a room and look around you, and 95% of what's in this room came on the back of a truck, you know, and you can have a career that can influence that, you know, you can support that. Don't come into the industry if you don't like something that's challenging and changing, in certainly from a management perspective, and come into the industry if you are a people person, because I do believe, forget all the robotics Amazon have got whizzing around, you know, forget all the, you know, the automation that we both experienced many years ago up in Wigan, it's still a people industry. You know, so if you like engaging with people, if you like the challenges, if you like working as a team to resolve issues, this is the sector for you, I would suggest, from my experience.
Thanks, Richard. And how would somebody that's interested in a career, whether it be in road haulage as a driver or how would they find out more information about it?
That's where, you know, that's one of the things that we're talking about, which is why we're doing the generation of logistics, but, you know, the good awareness piece, because at the moment it's piecemeal. Yeah. I mean, you can go and speak to the you know, the PLC, the corporates, you can speak to Berlin, you can speak to Stobart, you can speak to Wincantons, you can do with DHL. You're kind of aware of those people and those corporate entities, and you can, you know, engage with their relevant departments. I was talking to one of the Metro Mayors the other day, and this is quite a relevant point, actually. He said, we've done some research in our area and we can't see where the driver vacancies are, so therefore we can't tell how many driver vacancies there are in this region, so therefore we can't apportion any investment to bring in the new and the next generation, because where do these vacancies appear? To some degree, this industry is hidden. It sits under the radar. We don't publicise it. We don't publicise the chance and the opportunity. And, you know, when you see, I'll talk specifically about road haulage, when you see a truck, you know, it's big, it's noisy, you know, sometimes there's plumes of white smoke coming from behind it. You know, it's not particularly appealing and attractive. That's what you see. We've actually, you know, so if you want to drive one of those, the only thing you can do at the moment is go to the Truck Fest, for example. Like last weekend was Truck Fest in Peterborough, and we were there as the RHA. And we had a stand saying, do you want to become a driver? Come and join up. It's that basic at this moment in time, Malcolm. So I think smaller, the SME side, we need to collectively, across, you know, the trade associations, raise the profile and make access to it quite easily. You can apply for apprenticeships, you can go into a boot camp, you know, but it's not an easy industry to get into at this moment in time.
And that it sort of sits next to the fact that we've got a driver shortage. So it's clearly something that, as an industry, We do need to focus on how do we make that access easier for people so that they can understand that there are very worthwhile and secure careers for people within the industry that are enjoyable and that do offer progress and opportunity within that.
And I think as an industry, we have to accept that people no longer stay in professions for life. And I think the pandemic was quite a good example of that. So, there'll be that turn. Drivers used to, the average age of a driver is 55 and above, which you should be aware of. And it's 98% is male. It's that environment. And if you look at the lower entry, I think there's less than 4% are under 32 of the drivers that sit in that space. There's always going to be a turn because of the change of the world in the last 20 years. The mobile phone, social media, work-life balance, people are a lot more aware now of the environment they're working, they're a lot aware of their own mental status and their mental health, and I think there'll be certain times where working in this industry works for people, working it doesn't, and people dip in and dip out. For example, there are roughly 600,000 HGV licenses in this country. At any one time, 250,000 are lying dormant because people decided to step away from the industry for whatever reason that may be. Now they may start back in for 3 months at Christmas or at soup season, as we remember. I think we have to be more agile in how we think about it as we look at the next 5-10 years and the overall supply chain and what that looks like from a resourcing perspective.
Okay. Look, Richard, thank you so much for giving your valuable time. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I'm sure we'll have a conversation outside of this podcast. So thanks again. The Logistics Collective are going to be doing a series of podcasts with a number of people. So for the listeners, if you would like and follow, if you like and follow us, we will give you an update as to when the next podcast is going to land. But thanks again, Richard, and I wish you a very good weekend.
Thank you very much, Malcolm.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.